Oh, I was just getting my groove on. That's Orlando Julius and his Heliocentrics with a nifty little number called In the Middle. This is from his 2014 album, Jayede Afro. He's a pioneer of Nigerian Afrobeat music, was a major influencer of Fela Anikulapo Kuti's music, plays a saxophone, is a singer, band leader, and pretty much helped to launch this genre of music called Afrobeat, or Afro Soul and High Life music. He's still going strong at age 78. I bet you it's the music that has kept him really current in more ways than one. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eucharist Lead. And, well, we'll see where it goes today. When I say that, I mean, let's see if you're keeping up to date with the issues of the day. I'm going to ask a couple of questions, and some may be general and broad. Others would be quite specific. But either way, I'm expecting you to put together for us a cogent argument that proves your point. We're getting better at this, I must tell you. And the whole idea is that once this is, you know, you're going to be the graduating class, and you will be unleashed. You will unleash yourself on the world. They won't be ready for you because you're learning how to integrate your thoughts. You're learning how to make an argument. You're learning how to disassemble precepts and concepts and present your own. That's very, very, very good. So we start off with a kind of philosophical question, but it's more than just a philosophical question for you. And here it is. Are schools for the gifted and talented doing more harm than good to education in our society? Let me repeat. Are schools for the gifted and talented doing more harm than good to education in our society? What are your thoughts? At 888-874-4888. That's a very simple, it sounds like a simple and straightforward question, but I guarantee you that it's a very complex question that might take you into places where you weren't expecting to go today. But there it is. What's your thought on that? We start off with Jackie from Brooklyn. Hello, Jackie. You're on the air.
Okay, good afternoon, Eucharist, and to the listening family.
Good afternoon.
I'm glad to be able to get in. Okay, this is an interesting question because my eldest son, he was enrolled in a gifted and talented program when he was in fifth or sixth grade, and then he went on to junior high school. The problem that I have with it, I don't know about in other cities, but in New York we have such classes, and then they have two feeder high schools that are designated as the super gifted and talented, which they don't call it that. But here in New York we have Stuyvesant High School and Bronx Science and I guess Brooklyn Tech. All right, the problem with the gifted and talented, to me, it's putting the cart before the horse. Instead of bringing up the entire educational level so that all children can benefit and then perhaps identify children that are even maybe exceptional but stay in the mainstream of the classroom, We do it the other way in New York, which is to sort of segregate those children out and leave the other so-called normal, well, you know, lower, not lower functioning, I don't want to use that word, but the children that are not designated gifted and talented. The problem that I found, my son is an African-American male, and he was, when he was in the sixth grade, he was the only black male in the class. So that wasn't good. For example, during one of the, when they were preparing for a class play, the teacher told my son that he would play the role of the mugger. And my son told her that he could not do that. And the teacher asked him why. And he says, my mother would never allow that. So when he came home and told me, I said, do I need to come up there? He said, no, Mom, I took care of it. So they gave him a different role. One of my friends whose son, our sons are all in their 50s now, but one of my dear friend, her son, when he went to Brooklyn Tech, he experienced the same thing. He was 15 years old and he was admitted to the school, but he was the only black male in the class. So that's not good. The whole issue with the specialized high schools here in New York, statistics have shown that they're predominantly children of different ethnic groups, but mostly predominantly of the same ethnic group, where 1 to 2% of our children are, meaning children of African-American parents or people of the diaspora. Those children are 1 to 2% of the class. So it has to be modified. It has to evolve. And the school system needs to change to meet the needs of all students, including students with learning disabilities. So that's my take on all of this.
Okay. Your take closely resembles my take. And that's why I'm asking the question today. This idea, some people received the idea and accepted the idea because it made them feel special for all the reasons that you pointed out. They were likely to be in the vast minority, pardon the pun, in these student populations. And so the parents said, ew, see, my boy, my girl, whoever is special. But not thinking of what it is they put their children into. So I thank you for getting us started so powerfully today. Thank you, Jackie, for your call.
Good to talk to you.
Thank you. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Good afternoon.
You know, Eutrice, this issue is near and dear to my heart, and it's one that Eric Adams, who is projected to be the next mayor of New York City, it is one that he and I have discussed and debated and have divergent opinions. So recently, the current mayor of New York, de Blasio, indicated that he intended to to do away with the gifted and talented. So I think it's important that people have a history on how the gifted and talented program came into being in the first place. Back in the 70s and 80s, there was white flight from New York City. Middle-class white families were leaving New York to go to the suburbs. They were leaving the city to go out of state because they did not want to pay for private school education because the quality of the education in the New York City public schools, they did not believe, was up to par. And so in the 70s, there was it was called the SP. I don't remember what SP stood for. But those kids literally were segregated within the schools. They received an enriched program that then filtered them into the honors program in high school. Well, the SP essentially became the gifted and talented. And so the gifted and talented was designed to was designed to stop that white flight out of New York City and out of New York State. And so that is what we have been left with today. Now, there are only approximately 16,500 kids in the Gifted and Talented program in New York City. But there are over 100,000 black and brown children in the New York City public school system. So you have this very, very small group of children who are literally getting a private school education at public taxpayer expense, while the other children absolutely get nothing. Now, when you look at the specialized high schools, you know, the test that the four-year-olds take to get into the Gifted and Talented program as a four-year-old, you know, everybody knows it's bogus. You know, the families, they hire tutors, they take them to these programs that teach them how to take the test. It's absolutely bogus. But once these children have taken the test, it then puts them on track to get a private school education at public taxpayer expense, and the rest of the kids get nothing. As a matter of fact, the school that my child was zoned for when he was scheduled to go into kindergarten in 1980, they had just started a Gifted and Talented program in that school. At that particular time, and actually it currently is, it's a black and brown school. And I went to get an application for my black child, who is a male. And the principal looked at me and said that he didn't believe that my black child qualified for Gifted and Talented. The problem is that the bulk of the children in that school are black and brown and come from the projects across the street. And he thought that I was one of those parents. And so the point is, today in 2021, when you go into that same black and brown school, when you look in the Gifted and Talented program, there may be one or two children in that class, in that program. So no, it needs to be done away with. You know, the parents who have their children in these programs say that, well, you're dumbing down my child because the other children can't keep up with my child. And so my response to that is, All children should be in the same program. If your child is excelling in math, or your child is excelling in reading, or your child is excelling in the arts, then the school and the program should be able to accommodate those children that are succeeding in whatever area they have, which is what happened to my child. So, you know, I ate rice and beans and peanut butter so that he could go to a private school. And that's exactly what happened. My child excelled in math, and so what the teacher did, they didn't take him out and put him in a special class. They just gave him more. So this Gifted and Talented program is bogus. It's designed to placate white families, white and Asian families. Let's call a spade, and nobody cares about the black and brown children. Nobody.
Do you believe there already has been a negative impact of this Gifted and Talented program?
You cannot have a two-tiered system of education when some kids get everything and the rest get nothing. You know, we are progressing into a world where AI is going to be the order of the day. How can you prepare our children for the changing world? No longer even the manufacturing technology is going to require AI. How can you prepare these children for employment? Or you don't expect them to be employed. You expect them all to be in the prison, in the school to prison pipeline. Is that what people expect? Because that's the future that we are preparing for these children.
Okay, so just give us again what you believe is a corrective action that in fact would save these children from such a future.
Then if I were in a position to impact policy, the first thing I would do is eliminate the gifted and talented. The Board of Education, the Board of Education owes all children, a quality education. As a matter of fact, they just settled, and I mean just within the last maybe month or two, the Campaign for Fiscal Equity. Now, I don't know how many people are familiar with the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, but briefly, it was a lawsuit that was originated in the 80s by Robert Jackson, who is still a council person in New York City. And his premise was that the children in New York City were being underfunded in their education. The Board of Ed said that the children were only entitled to an eighth grade education. And so you cannot, if that is your premise, if that's where you're starting from, you are already saying that you don't, these children don't deserve a quality education. And so that lawsuit languished for almost 20 years. It was just settled. And so there's going to be the judgment that was awarded. There's going to be funds poured into the Board of Ed to enrich the curriculum so the children can catch up. But the first thing they've got to do is, number one, eliminate the gifted and talented, and then demand that the State Education Department filter down to the New York City Department of Education a quality education that prepares all children, for the future technology. So that they can engage in meaningful wages, in meaningful employment at a living wage. You cannot have a two-tiered system of education where some get everything and the others get nothing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air. What do you think about gifted and talented programs in our schools?
Greetings, Utrecht. Hopefully you're having a good day.
I am, as a matter of fact.
This is somewhat a personal experience for me, and I will probably slant it towards, a personal, my opinion will be more personal than anything. But I was in a gifted program at one point in my education. And I will say that it wasn't a very good experience for me. And I'll say this because I think the issue was how, what is identifiable to a gifted child? Because I think a lot of children have different gifts, maybe not because of aptitude or, just solving equations at 3 years old, but for me, it's like, here's my experience. Now, I was in a gifted program in my second year of high school, and only because of the fact that I went from going from a Catholic school in my, in my elementary years from K through eight, and then I went to a public school after that. Now, during that time, Catholic schools were actually pretty good academically. I was in one of the better Catholic schools on the south side of Chicago. Then I went to a public school. And then, like, my first year in high school, I just got all A's. And the only reason why, I did that because of the fact that a lot of the stuff that they taught me in my first year of high school, I saw in like seventh and eighth grade in elementary school. And so a lot of the children who had came in from public school, they didn't see all that. But I did. But I just never considered myself gifted because I just seen all this stuff before. And so the second year they put me in this, gifted program. And the problem was, I guess for me, it was the socialization of the gifted children. Now, I was in a high school where it was, kind of mixed racially. So, you had kind of like, an equal amount of black students, white students, and Hispanic students. But for me, I just didn't fit in with that crass caller who, God, I can't remember her name. She's one of my favorite callers.
That's Patricia.
Yeah, Patricia. She touched on it in regards to, you know, parents basically getting their children all of the tutoring and the materials to, you know, to give them the advantages to being in the gifted program. Well, for me, I didn't grow up with parents with a lot of money. But when I got into this gifted program, you know, I'm meeting children who are, you know, children of lawyers and doctors and judges. And it just, I just didn't feel, you know, like I fit in with them. So I think there's, you know, there's a detriment to this gifted program where it separates the children socially from, you know, the black and brown children who don't have the means and the whereabouts that, you know, that a lot of a lot of the children who are children of parents of means and whatever. So this basically, you know, insinuates the capitalist system of the more you have, the more opportunities you have. Now, you know, unfortunately, I would say unfortunately in quotes, you know, I was one of those children who kind of like got through, even though, you know, like I said, my family didn't have a lot of money. So that's why they looked at me kind of odd, like, how did you get here? But, you know, it's funny, but it's sad in a way because of the fact that.
Yes, it is. You know,
it's sad in a way because of the fact that even though it helped me academically, but, you know, emotionally and socially, it really didn't help me because of the fact that, you know, a lot of my friends that I made in high school wasn't from my high school because I just didn't fit in with that particular crowd. So I think it's kind of a detriment to our children. And I agree with Patricia and the previous caller in regards to how we deal with, you know, so-called gifted children, but how do we identify them? You know, how do we identify who's gifted and who's not? And I strongly agree with Patricia about this may hurt our children in the long run than anything. And, you know, it's kind of crazy, you know, I'm telling you that I was once identified a gifted student, which I don't feel I was a gifted student, but, you know, I just feel like this is something that might hurt us in the long run.
So with that feeling and with the direct experience that you have had, what do you think is a workable alternative? Should these programs continue, the gifted and talented children's kind of programs all over the country, with all of the fallout that you have described, children aware that they may not be fitting in, they don't deserve to be there, or they can't keep up. How do you remedy this?
Well, there definitely needs to be better teachers in the school. If you have better teachers, if you have better educators, you will have classes where there is a mix of people who, you know, may not be getting lessons correctly and some who are catching on more than others. But I think in a sense, when you're talking about training or producing better teachers, they have to deal with these. They have to, you know, and I'm hoping they're doing this when they're producing the teachers, how to deal with mixed learning environments. And when you're talking about mixed learning environments, we're talking about certain children with better abilities than others. And this does not mean that certain children are slower than others as far as educationally. They just have, you know, certain children just learn better in different ways. So, you know, for example, some children are better readers. Some children have better mathematical skills. Some children are better audio. Some children have better visual skills. And sometimes the teachers have to ascertain, you know, where their students are in regards to, you know, how they learn. And so I think this divides our children even more and basically segregates the children even more, which was talked about earlier as well. And so, you know, and it especially segregates them according to not just class, but just, you know, also race in this regard.
All right. Well, thank you. You gave us a pretty good insight. I like the idea that you took us into your personal history with this and how it impacted on you as a kid, just a kid. You know, and all these plans are made around you. But now that you're grown, you can see what worked and what didn't work, what was good and what was not good. Thank you, Henry. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, you, Therese, and
good afternoon,
all the scholars in the seminar. I have a lot of experience with that gifted and talented program. Most of my children are in the 50s and 60s now, and I had children who could read the New York Times by the time they were four or five. And all of them went to that program. Now, I could talk at length about the experience I've had with the program, but I'm going to limit it to one experience that I had in one elementary school with two of them. I went to this school to enroll them in the school, and I went there with a mission that I had in mind, was to get them into the program at that time. So I broke out one of my gorgeous suits, and I had all the paraphernalia, my a wonderful shirt and tie and all that, and took them to the school. And you know, the principal wanted to see how well they read, and he got out a book, and they could just read it very well, and he interviewed them. And I spoke to him about the gifted and talented program in his school, and he immediately told me, no, that was not available. Yes, but we have free lunch. Your children can have free lunch. And that's what he said. So I said, well, I'm not sending them here for free lunch. I'm interested in them getting into this program that you have. So he said no. And I said, I'm sorry that you're saying that. So he put them in a class where in the fifth grade they were doing one and one is two and the spelling of cat and things like that in this particular class. And so he didn't know who he was dealing with. He was dealing with Brother David and I don't play. So the next morning, this was in the time of you know, like telegrams and whatnot. He had a message on his desk telling him that he would meet me in court unless he changed my children. So at that point, he changed them to the gifted and talented program. When they got to this program, it was amazing. In this school where they're mostly African-American phenotype people and Latino phenotype people that is very common, and very few European-type phenotype people, they got to that class that was full of children who had that European phenotype. And no black children in that class at all. So that is what happened. Now, that happened because I leaned on him with the lawsuit that I was going to do against him. And every time I saw this little principal, he turned like a red color, like a beet. Every time he saw me, he turned into red. And when I found out what his game was, and it was very interesting because one of my children came home, one of my daughters, and she said to me, "Daddy, I thought you were getting me into a smart class." Well, so-and-so, I won't mention any names or anything, but so-and-so doesn't seem bright at all. You sure you're getting me into the right class? So this principal was looking out for people of his own ethnicity and so forth, and putting them into a segregated class, and he couldn't care less about the black children in his school and the Latino children that were in that school. So that is one of the outstanding experiences of my children. And eventually they went to ruling class prep schools, most of them. One went to high school with the public schools. And in those schools, it was much different. They met all kinds of ruling class children and whatnot. But that is my experience with the gifted and talented.
So based on your experience, would you recommend the dissolution of this program, a revamping of it, and what would a revamped version
be? Yes, that's a good question. I would recommend that it be dissolved. And instead, I would suggest that class size be reduced precipitously. If a teacher has a smaller class size, then I think that would be much better for dealing with the variety of levels that you're going to find among the students. And the other part to that is that I would arrange, I would spend the money to do more tutoring programs. So between smaller class size and more tutoring programs available absolutely free for every child, you can go to class and that's good. And if you're having problems, then you can go to tutoring and have individual or near individual help with your work. So that's the way I would look at it. See, I could not imagine having a teacher with a large class and having to give four or five different lesson plans at once. So that's very difficult. But I would make the classes smaller and go and spend all additional monies on tutoring for children so that every child would be given the chance to perform in their work at a good level based on where they are at the moment. So
right.
I would not get rid of any children at all.
Thank you so much. Thanks for contributing today. Claude from Washington, D.C., you're on the air. Hello, Claude. Okay. Mitch from New York, you're on the air.
How are you doing?
Okay.
Well, it seems to be that That would be against the rules. Brown versus Board of Education, separate but equal. So it's proven that back in 1952.
Hold on for a second, Mitch. You have something running in the background.
Yes.
Like television or radio or something?
Yeah. Yeah, it's off. Yeah. It's gone.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Back in 1954, when they had this Brown versus Board of Education, separate but equal, it's unconstitutional. It was proven that. And it's been proven, it's been brought up through the courts many of times. So how can they justify having separate schools for one people and separate schools for the other? I mean, it's not equal. I mean, in New York City, the students have filed a lawsuit that they're coming out of school not being educated. It's a law school lawsuit that's being filed now, you know. So to me, the whole thing is it's a backdoor of undermining this Brown versus Education, separate but equal. They're separate, but they're not equal, for sure. So that's the way I feel about it.
Thank you, Claude. By the way, my father's name was Claude. So I'm partial to people named Claude. Thank you so much for calling in today. Marcus from Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Thank you very much for letting me in on this discussion, Eutrice. I could literally riff about this for a week. The misconception is that we have something called American education. Education and schooling are not the same thing. An education is something you do to yourself. It can't be given to you. You can only take an education. And the purpose of schooling is not education, and hasn't been since after the Civil War. This is where people would really be well served to look deeply, especially if you have children, into the history of how the American educational system was formed. It's modeled on the Prussian military model. It was highly admired for the regimented type of obedient conformist people that it turned out. I can give you an example. When we had 13 colonies, the school, there was no school system. There was the little red schoolhouse, and all the ages were in the same room together. And when Thomas Paine's pamphlet Common Sense was published, it sold about 100,000 copies, and there was maybe a total of 1.5 million people in the country. It's sold 100,000 copies, and it's estimated that probably 3 other people read that copy, at least. Slaves understood and read Thomas Paine's Common Sense. Now, Common Sense isn't taught in college until graduate school because the students don't understand the English. Now, did people get biologically more stupid, or is the school system set up to do something else? In fact, before World War I, Woodrow Wilson made a speech. You can look it up. And he said, look, we want one class to have a liberal education. We want another class, the very much larger one, to forego this privilege, and they have to be trained to perform specific manual tasks. This is the purpose of education. If you read, the principles of secondary education in American history, you will find, I mean, it's stated right out. The main function of education in the school system is called the diagnostic function. It doesn't mean what it means in medicine. It means each student's proper social role is identified. They are sorted out and to be trained only so far as they're likely to end up in the social machine, not beyond. So conformity is essential, and what they call the propedeutic function. This is basic to principles of education. It's a fancy word that means a small fraction of kids will be trained to take over management of the system, to be guardians of the capitalist system. And again, they're not trained to be any smarter than that, just enough to be good managers and oversee the system. So school, from kindergarten to through college, has been looked upon at least since the year, since the Civil War, as a branch of industry and a tool for government to use. So when you come to things like classes for the gifted, that's what you're doing, is you're immediately taking human beings and you're saying, this group should be privileged in a certain way. But of course, if it turns out that you happen to be a shade of color that isn't socially useful for capitalism, you will actually be trained to have the opposite effect. Yes, you call it, you know, yes, we're calling you a gifted child and we're going to give you this special education. But look at the outcomes. That is not the outcome. Now, this is what people have to understand about this educational system, so-called. It isn't for that purpose. I've had the experience of teaching children and adults, and when I worked with children, I had the experience. I was allowed a great deal of flexibility. So I mixed the ages together. You see, this is why the school system separates ages. And right away, I noticed after 2 weeks, what happens is, the younger kids see what the older kids are doing, and it helps them advance from where they are. They start thinking beyond the material that's supposed to be geared for them, and the older kids immediately take it upon themselves to help instruct the younger ones. This is exactly what the system doesn't want, because that will actually teach people how to spontaneously form a community as kids. The system doesn't want that. It wants obedient, conformist little units of production, and that's what it grinds out. So I would just leave it at that. Do your own research on it. And this is what you'll find. And it's really, if you look at the rest of the world with the highest test scores, we're among our adults are among, in fact, dead last in the OECD countries in numeracy. We're the worst with numbers in the entire world, and 35th out of 39 in literacy. I mean, Americans can barely read and write. Well, look at the countries at the very top, okay, that have the highest test scores in the world. The Northern European countries, Japan, places like that. Well, the teachers are the administrators. That's one of the main reasons. The teachers themselves devise the curriculum. They try it out. They see what works and what doesn't. In the United States, in every school system, from kindergarten through college, 70% of these institutions is administrators who don't know anything and they don't contribute anything. They're just a managerial class. They really don't contribute. It's not about education at all. It's about social management. And we have to see through this stuff. It's important. Do your homework on this, and you'll find out what the schools are really for and what they're really designed to do to your children.
Wow. I can tell you, mm-hmm. I didn't expect, well, of course, I expect the level and the caliber of input that we customarily get on this program, but today it's quite an eye-opener, and it can't stop at this conversation. This conversation will have to continue because there are other aspects integrated into it and related to it that we just have to get addressed. It's a major issue, and I can surmise that many people, you know, they think of it as cool. There's no major, concern. And in fact, something called the Program for the Gifted and Talented. I mean, how negative could it be? How dangerous could it be? Well, we have learned and continue to learn a lot about that. If you listen today, it's a great example of how far this conversation needs to go. Thank you very much, Marcus. Harry from Boston, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Latrice, I love your show, and I got to have you know that it's just a breath of fresh air to hear you, and the music is tops.
Thank you.
Can you hear me? Yeah,
yes,
I just want you to know... Yeah, I went through that experience in grade school, I have you know. I was one of those kids that didn't take classes. I took CLEPS, and all they did was raise the level of mathematics one level to the next level to the next level. And then I got involved with Harvard for 2 weeks, evaluation of my IQ and all this sort of bit, which was an absolute trip. I got back to school after that, walked in a science class, teacher tells the rest of the kids, now he thinks he's better than us. I ran out of the class crying. I mean, I went for persecution. You wouldn't believe it, okay? With all this and that, the cream of the crop, me, you know, blonde, blue-eyed, Jewish kid, Italian mother, you know, Northern European. I mean, what they put me through, it was, that's where I thought they were going to nail me to a cross. I'm serious, you know, it was terrible. And I wish to God I didn't even do it. And it was, you know, I got a quota number. They call it a quota number, okay, where it stand up in a court of law and all this kind of bit. IQ stands for intellectual quota, not quotient. That's, they think it's quotient, but it's not. But the point is what I went through, I wouldn't want anybody to go through that. And I think kids, there's kids who go through that now through that school. I was chosen to do that with the math and the rest of classes. Like I said, just taking CLEPS. Okay? You know what the CLEPS are, right? Just take an exam and you move on and you don't even take, you have to take the class. I did all that. And it sounds really whoopee-woo, but it was hell for what I went through. And this was when I was 8 and a half years old. I went through that. Yeah, that's it. And I just want people to know that, you know, it was not good. It wasn't good. It was terrible. And I wouldn't want a kid to go through that. No way. It was right. Right. That's what I got to tell you.
All right. Thank you so much for your call.
You bet. All right. Take care. Thanks.
Thanks. This conversation must continue. It has to, because for one thing, we haven't gotten to quite a few people yet. And it is important that we hear them and what it is they have to say. And their contribution is important, so we will continue this conversation tomorrow. But we are going to move in a methodical way, because I have my own little story to tell about gifted and talented. And as a kid, I went through school pretty fast. I was considered, you know, one of the top kids in the school. And It's the weirdest thing. The people who actually redesigned this whole thing were my parents. They said, how come all these other children? Who's teaching them? I'll get into it a little bit deeper, but this has been a subject very close to my heart for a long time. And I've been hearing this week a lot about gifted and talented, and I continue to say, why isn't every child considered gifted and talented? Some children may need a little extra help here or there, but every child is gifted and talented, as far as I could see. And a system that refuses to recognize that basic understanding is a system that already has failed. Children receive information in different ways. They process it differently. And there's so much about education that we would consider as basic stuff that, you know, they think you have to have a master's or a doctorate degree to understand these things. It's very basic. Are you connecting with a child? Is a child connecting with you? Are you genuine? Children, you could be a teacher and everything, but children know that you're not there for them. They know that. You don't have the gift of teaching. They don't trust you. And you like it that way. You prefer not to have to teach certain children. And we'll talk about that. How does that infect the classroom, infect the minds of these children who are just, they're chomping at the bit to learn something new. And then they systematically get beaten up and beaten down. And this coming from a society that claims education is number one, but you don't know what it is. You don't know what education is. And I went to a very little rinky-dinky school. Okay? It wasn't a big, elaborate structure. It's a little school, but we were so happy there. And our teachers were the very best. They were the very best. And you can tell they're giving from the heart. And they love you just like they love their own children. So that was an added incentive to learn, because they were parenting you while you were taught, being taught. So we will continue this discussion tomorrow. There are lots of people who are queued up, ready to share their views with us, and we should hear them. And we should answer the central question, which we didn't get to today, the question itself. Do we really believe in the democracy of education, this very democratic society? Do we believe in the democracy of education, that everybody ought to have it, everybody's capable of having it? It's just that how you deliver the package, how do you organize it so that children get the message early on that their success is what is important. Thank you so much, everyone, for contributing today. And again, for me, it was very enlightening listening to your personal thoughts, especially, and experiences. And we should raise our voices as loud as and as clearly as they can go, so that people know that this is not a joke. This is very serious to many people by virtue of their own experience in their time. Thanks. Let's get together tomorrow again and talk some more. Bye-bye.